Modern life seems to demand a lot of compassion from us sometimes, and that can be tiring. Sometimes we're hard-pressed to deal with our own problems without being burdened at work and at home by other people's troubles. But if we can learn to be compassionate without becoming depleted or overly detached, surely there are benefits for everyone. What about you? How have you avoided becoming overwhelmed by the need for compassion towards others? What strategies have you used? Leave us a message on our Facebook page. Amanda Lambros is with us. She's a counsellor and mental health and wellbeing consultant who works with individuals and organisations dealing with compassion fatigue. Amanda, welcome to Life Matters.
Hi, Hilary. How are you?
I'm well. We'll talk about the personal sphere in a moment, but let's start with the workplace. How big a problem is it if people experience compassion fatigue at work?
It becomes a bigger problem when they're actually not doing anything about it. So what we do know is that compassion fatigue leads to burnout. And if you have burnout, you really actually don't even want to go back to work. So that becomes the problem.
And how aware are people that this might be a problem in their particular workplace?
I think we're becoming more aware. I think there was a tendency to kind of brush it under the carpet, but there's definitely certain professions that are much more aware of it. So people in the helping professions and also in nursing and medicine are really well aware of it because the research started back in the 1960s with regard to compassion fatigue.
How does it manifest in the workplace? What particular warning signals are we looking for?
I think one of the best things to look at is when you first start a job, you actually love going to in most cases, you love going to your job, right? So you kind of go, oh, I look forward to actually waking up and seeing my clients or seeing my patients and all that kind of thing's wonderful. When it starts to creep into compassion fatigue, you kind of get this sense of, oh, do I really want to wake up and go to work? Or, you know what, I'll just stay in bed a few more minutes. And it starts to become this very slow drip of, I actually don't want to go to work. And there might be numerous reasons why, but if that's not seen and checked, then it's going to lead to something else.
So you mentioned burnout before. How is it different from burnout? It sounds a bit like the early stages.
It is. It's kind of like the pre-burnout. So it's where all the indicators come in, where you're taking additional time off of work, you decrease your workload, but purposely decreasing your workload. And so you're still going into work and you're still engaging with your colleagues. But by the time burnout hits, it's borderline depression. You don't want to go to work. You don't want to get out of bed. You don't want to actually be in that profession anymore. So you lose your zest for actually being there.
And obviously that would have productivity impacts on businesses. But Amanda, you've worked in the health sector, training people in the caring professions, where obviously the stakes are a bit higher. Is it about the emotional labour involved in those types of roles that makes people vulnerable to compassion fatigue there?
It is. And that's what the research says around it. It's how much of us are we giving to other people? And those in the helping profession, that's exactly what they do. They've gone into a helping profession because they actually enjoy helping others. But then if you're not taking care of yourself, so self-care, which is not a new topic, but self-care is one of those things that you actually have to be on top of, especially in the helping profession. So making sure that you're refilling your energy stores, doing the things that you actually really enjoy is vitally important.
I understand that some organisations put policies in place where you can only see 10 clients a day maximum. And I was trying to imagine a nurse in an emergency department being able to stick to that. I mean, some of these professions, I'm wondering how you could possibly guard against compassion fatigue.
One of the best things is actually finding the things that you enjoy doing. And so we all have things that we love doing, and whether it be going for a walk, getting a massage, going down to the park and playing some basketball, you need to know what's important for you to actually regenerate your energy stores. And we all have them. Some of us need to dig a little deeper to figure out what those are, but as long as you're engaging in those, so you do your, let's assume a 9-to-5 day, and then you're going to, okay, at 5:30, here's what I'm going to do to kind of leave work at work and then regenerate me so that I'm the best version of myself when I go back to home and then also when I'm coming back into work tomorrow morning.
I guess some of those issues are structural though, aren't they? If you have enormously long shifts and perhaps even need to travel a long distance to get to and from work, the time that you have available for massages and walks in the park is going to be limited. What can workplaces do to try and protect their staff?
I think one of the best things that workplaces can do, especially if we know that they have extra long hours compared to other professions, is really make the work environment amenable to that. So I know that there's certain places that you can actually go and get a massage on work time, like they bring massage therapists in, or they have yoga classes that are run throughout the day, so that at any point in your day, if you have that space of time, you can go, okay, here's my 30-minute break to take my yoga class.
Is it also about, before you become employed with an employer, assessing that culture and working out if there are ways to shift it and make it more healthy?
If you have the ability to do that, I definitely recommend doing that. But unfortunately, we're in a society where a lot of people just have to do the job. They're like, I need the job because I need money, because I need to pay for my mortgage or whatever it might be. So taking the time to really say, is this the workplace environment that I want to be in, is usually not afforded to a lot of people.
We're chatting with Amanda Lambros. She's a counsellor and mental health and wellbeing consultant who helps people deal with compassion fatigue. And I'd love your thoughts on this too, whether you've avoided becoming overwhelmed by the need to be compassionate for other people. I mean, it's not something we can avoid. We're all part of a community and a society. Tell us what strategies you've come up with to make sure you stay safe as well. You can leave a message on our Facebook page. Amanda, we've talked about the workplace setting, but even if we look at the jobs where there is emotional labour, the caring professions, I want to shift it a little further to home. What about if you're an informal carer of a loved one who's unwell? What might compassion fatigue look like in that context?
Well, that's even more important, is because you're outside of the profession, at least when you're going into work, you have colleagues that you can kind of bounce off of and say, here's where I'm feeling. If you're the sole carer or even a dual carer at home for somebody else, it makes it really difficult because your sphere of support is much smaller. So in those situations, that's where you actually have to know what your self-care plan is and action it on a regular basis, not create a self-care plan and go, yeah, that would be the best case scenario and I'd love to do that one day. It's like, no, you need to regularly get on top of that and making sure you're taking care of yourself.
How much care is needed? Does it differ for different people, or is it just about saying, I have needs and I will make sure that some of them are catered to every day?
I think part of it is, yes, I have needs and I need to cater for my own self, but everyone's going to be on a different bit of spectrum. So some people will require a little more to top up the stores, and other people, it's like, as long as they get 30 minutes out to read their favorite book or zone out on a TV show that, you know, it doesn't even matter as a TV show, but it's like a zone out option. Those are the kind of things that people need to look at, not only their physical health, but mental, emotional, social, and spiritual. So really making sure that they have the ability to self-care in all of those areas.
What about things like friendships? I think a lot of us would be a little sad at the idea that we had to be on guard in our personal relationships against being overly drained.
Well, I think it's not necessarily the need to be on guard, but it's also recognizing that there's only so much we can do. And if we're not, I'm going to say, in a well space for ourselves, then we're definitely not in the position to be in a well space for anybody else. So that's where taking care of yourself is vitally important. So if I'm the best version of myself, I can be the best version for my partner, my children, my friends, especially when they need it.
And if you are in a friendship or a partnership where you suspect that perhaps you are starting to experience compassion fatigue, what are some of the warning signs you might look for in your interactions with the other person?
I think one of the biggest warning signs is complacency. So when you kind of just feel like, ugh, I don't want to be here anymore, I don't want to be with this person, or if it's a partnered relationship and you're like, you know what, this is like a roommate, anybody could replace this current person and it wouldn't make a difference to me. I think complacency is probably one of the biggest indicators, or wanting to spend more time away from loved ones. That is another big indicator.
Our language changes too, doesn't it? The way we speak to people.
Absolutely. It goes from a really positive and supportive kind of environmental language to not necessarily negative, but dismissive.
Dismissive. Ooh, that would be a big red flag, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You would hope so. You would hope people would notice that and be like, okay, time to self-care. Great. I'm going for my massage or I'm going for my walk down to the park or whatever it is.
Well, a lot of people worry that we're becoming a really selfish society. Is there a danger that we might be saying, I have no time for your problems. I have to go and walk in the park and then get my massage and you can just deal with it yourself?
See, I'm a firm supporter of it's not selfish, it's self-care. And so I think it's a reframe of the language around that as well. There's a massive difference between selfish, which is I just want to look after myself and do everything for myself, or self-care, which is I need to be able to do this for myself so that I can help others.
And when we hear the words compassion fatigue, Amanda Lambros, most people immediately think about the phenomenon where charities are struggling now to inspire us to help other people that we don't know. Is this something you're seeing more of in your work too, that people feel they have nothing left to give to people in need elsewhere in the world?
That's one of the issues of compassion fatigue. So the moment that we start feeling like that, that you're feeling drained to the point that you're actually not helping other people, or that you don't even want to help people, that's where we need to see, well, what's happening with your energy stores? Where are you getting your energy from? And how come you're not topping those up?
And can we do anything about that on a global level? Because there are a lot of people with very few options relying on help from relatively well-off populations like us in Australia. How can we make sure that we don't let them down?
I think everyone has the opportunity to really assess where their own self-care is, so that they don't get into a compassion fatigue situation. And it could be, I think a lot of people think, oh, you have to be able to get a massage, therefore it costs money, therefore we don't have money, that kind of view. Where in reality, you could take a walk down to the park, you could go for a walk along the beach, you could sit in silence at a park and just observe things that are around you. So everyone, there's a huge spectrum of things that are available to us that are free or low cost to no cost. And I think engaging in those is very important.
And Amanda, do you think this phenomenon is getting worse in professional settings and also within our personal lives?
I think some people are not as willing to put their hand up and say, here's how I'm suffering. And I think that's where, you know, coming in to talk to people about wellness and how important it is for your own self-care so that you avoid compassion fatigue or avoid that slippery slope is really important. And I think organizations are becoming really well aware of it, definitely over the last 18 months, where they are bringing people like myself in to do certain programs and stuff like that to make sure that people are taking care of themselves. We know that productivity increases. We know that absenteeism decreases. So there's all these kind of things that it's like, all of a sudden, if you take care of your staff will take care of you. And great organizations are doing some work around that.
That sounds like a big shift in work expectations, because we've also seen that rise in an expectation that some workers will be constantly available, haven't we?
Yeah, and it's also setting your own boundaries as well. So just because the company has given you potentially, let's say, a company phone, doesn't necessarily mean you have to have that company phone on 24/7. Now, if you're a critical ER doctor, yes, please have your phone on 24/7. But there's also limitations to you. It's like, where are you actually setting in those boundaries of saying, okay, well, I'm at work, I'll have my phone on, and for an hour top and tailing, I'll have my phone on. However, we need to find a way to create these networks around us that, yep, I can have my phone on for these hours, but then you need to go and call Joe so that Joe has his phone on for the next few hours, and then call Sarah and Sarah will have hers on, so that it becomes a network and that one person doesn't feel responsible for everything.
When you talk of networks, I immediately think of friendship networks, because I look at my life, I would have completely struggled without my network of friends that I could call and say, I am having a problem, please listen to me, talk about it. How can we make sure that we're still there for each other and not kind of turning too insular into our own little bubbles?
I'm so glad you said that, Hillary, because that's one of the biggest things, is that our social circle is important. So we need to find the way to nurture those. So don't just kind of go head forward into work and then completely forget on your relationships and your friendships. I think it's just as important to actually monitor and nurture your relationships. So continue to have barbecues at friends' houses, or go out to lunches, or go out for coffees, and really nurture that relationship. And when you're sitting down to have a conversation with them, yes, you're able to dump your own stuff to kind of go, okay, I need some help, how can you help me out? But also really taking the time to sit there and be quiet and listen to your friends, because they might be going through the same thing as well. So it really does become a two-way conversation as opposed to a one-way dumping.
We've had a text message, Amanda, saying empathy is the pathway for compassion fatigue. What's your perspective on that?
It's a pathway. However, there's always roadblocks along the way, and there's always positive stops that you can make that actually say, okay, I am going to be aware and take care of myself. So just because we have empathy doesn't necessarily mean we're going to lead to compassion fatigue.
Interesting discussion, Amanda. Thank you so much for joining us today on Life Matters.
Anytime, Hillary. Have a great day.
Amanda Lambros is a counsellor and mental health and wellbeing consultant. She works with individuals and organisations dealing with compassion fatigue. You're listening to Life Matters here on RN.